Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
Welcome back. Hour number 3, Melnick in the Afternoon, TSN 690. It's game night on four fronts tonight in the National Hockey League, along with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. Mitch Melnick with you until 7 o'clock. Yesterday on this show,
Ryan Callahan,
like he's a meh during the regular season. You know, he's there. He has some value, but he's an example of a guy who, at this time of year, means a whole lot more. And they've got a few guys like that.
Well, Killorn is going to show up in the playoffs, guaranteed.
After it goes, Alex Killorn. Loose for Johnson. Turn it back.
That was the game-winning goal, Tampa Bay beating Detroit. Meantime, in St. Louis and Chicago.
The crowd yells, shoot, back is through one. Score! Ricocheting in! The game is over!
Doc, you asked me before overtime started, what are coaches focusing on? Clean, hard shifts. Tired Chicago Blackhawk players. Fresh St. Louis Blues players. Hitchcock changed, got Backus, Steen, and Berglund on the ice. It goes off Van Riemsdyk's stick and through the wickets.
Overtime winner by David Backus. If it's Thursday, Pierre McGuire must be in Florida.
Hockey insider Pierre McGuire, brought to you by the Old Orchard Pub. Five locations, with a sixth now open in Chattahoochee, and by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I'm very well, Mitch. I understand there's an interloper in your studio.
Yeah, it's an intern, actually. Just an intern, not an interloper. We were gonna surprise you with Stu Hackel, but Rod couldn't help himself.
Well, advanced scouting helps. You always have to ask questions before you come on the air.
But you knew I was coming anyway. It's not that big a surprise.
Well, it's still good, though. Hi, Stu.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
Pete? Pete. How many people call you Pete?
A lot more in hockey than you think. I was just talking to Gerard Gallant, and he said, "Hey, Pete, what are you doing down here?" I said, "I'm doing your game."
What are you doing down there?
3 o'clock this morning to sit around and just watch you guys play.
Stu Hackel is the former director of broadcasting in the National Hockey League. He helped us out when we were in New York doing the Canadiens and Rangers series, hockey blogger, old friend of both myself and Pierre, and now even Gallo and Rod feel a kinship that didn't exist there before. So here we go. Let's get right into starting where you were last night, the importance of St. Louis winning that opener, as you pointed out yesterday, with Duncan Keith out of that Chicago lineup.
Well, that was huge. I mean, they had to win that game. And Brian Elliott allowed them to win that game. It wasn't like it was a virtuoso performance, but it was good enough to get the job done. You could see the game plan right from the start. It was about being physical, aggressive, hard. We talked about it yesterday, full frontal assault hockey. They went right after the Chicago defense. They knew they were going to be down in numbers. They put Hjalmarsson out because of a big shot that he blocked early on in the game. He came back. That guy's as tough as anybody I know in the league. They took Michael Roosevelt, put him out for a while. He had to go to the dark room. He came back and played. He's pretty darn tough. But St. Louis deserves credit for hanging in there, and Brian Elliott deserves a ton of credit. That game probably should have been 6-2 Chicago, 6-4 Chicago, something like that. But Chicago should have won that game, but they didn't. So now they're in trouble. Well, not trouble. They're down in the series. They're not in trouble.
Well, that's a big question mark, right? Brian Elliott. And last night, he looked like the guy who led the league in save percentage. Now, it's one game, and we've seen him slide backwards at playoff time. But that's, if you want to see early on where your guy is at, you can't do better than a shutout in overtime in the opener.
Well, Jim Corsi, the goalie coach, has to be really proud of the way Brian Elliott played. His rebound control was very good. His angle play was outstanding. He didn't give up anything on the short side. We had the video documentation. Clearly, Chicago was trying to beat him short side in a lot of different situations, and he was hugging the post, and he was square, big-time square. So that's a big part of technical goaltending, and that's where you work, and obviously reps with the goalie coach matter. So Jimmy Corsi had to be really pleased. What I was impressed with St. Louis more than anything, they did a better job than usual in terms of establishing matchups and changing them up. Usually it's Backus against Taves. They didn't play that last night. They put Backus and Steen and Berglund out against Panarin and Kane and Anisimov. it was a much different matchup type situation. I thought St. Louis handled it really well.
I'm glad you mentioned Jim Corsi. He's a good friend of the show, and after, what, 16 years in Buffalo, he winds up in St. Louis, and maybe more people should be paying attention to him, considering the kind of season that Brian Elliott and Jake Allen had.
Well, I think Jim Corsi is one of the better goalie coaches in the league. You know how much I like to go to practice, especially early. I sometimes call Stu when I'm in Chicago because I used to love watching Stefan Waite work with Corey Crawford in particular. Now it's his brother, Jimmy, who does the work with Scott Darling and Corey Crawford. But I love going into St. Louis because Jimmy Corsi gets his guys out there early, and they do all kinds of technical work. And I just like watching guys that can adapt to that and guys that can't.
All right, on the subject of goaltenders, you had, who would have thought, a Pittsburgh Rangers a matchup would end up with a third-string goalie against a backup goalie?
Yeah, easy on the third-string goalie. I've been hearing that all day. And it's not your fault because that's what the written reports are saying. Jeff Zadkoff is better than a third-string goalie. Go check his numbers from the American Hockey
League. He's never had a bad – well, you know, I was just saying in terms of the depth chart to start the playoffs,
yeah,
he was at number three. But he's never had a really bad year at any level.
He's a phenomenal athlete. Go check his athletic gene pool. It's scary. Members of his family have played in the NFL. Others have played in the NBA. I mean, this guy is from a serious athletic family. He was a tremendous goalie at Miami of Ohio. He represented the United States at the World Junior. He was a draft pick of the LA Kings, and they don't mess up on too many of their draft picks. Look at their goaltending draft picks. Martin Jones, Jeff Zadkoff, Jonathan Quick, Jonathan Bernier, all guys playing in the league. They're really good at that stuff, especially Mike Fuda, who's in charge of their scouting. So it makes me laugh, and I'm not trying to pick fights here, but I read all these reports about how Zadkoff came out of nowhere. What? Watch games. He didn't come out of nowhere. The guy, he and Matt Murray last year shredded the American Hockey League playing for John Hines, who's now the coach with the New Jersey Devils. Ask him about it. Pick up the phone and call the guy and say, what's Zadkoff all about?
You want to pick up on the Rangers, Stu Hackel, and where they are right now without McDonough and who knows about Lundqvist, even though they get an extra day to worry about it?
Yeah, they do. But the thing that really struck me the most last night was that first Pittsburgh goal, Pierre. And I don't know if you've seen the replays of it, but Girardi thinks there should be an icing call, and he stops skating, puts his hand up, and he just gets beat to the net, and the goal is scored. I mean, it was a stunning play, and a guy who's, you know, clearly been struggled at times this year, you'd think that he would, you know, at least play the whistle. You know, I don't know if you have you seen that? And
well, I was watching the game when our game, before our game was started, I was watching that game, so absolutely, and I was watching Tampa and Detroit, too, in our studio, so I did see it. There's a lot that went into that. I love your description of Girardi holding his hand up. That's something they do in the European Pro Leagues or something you'd see from European teams at the World Junior trying to help the official make an offside or an icing call. That's not the way it works in the NHL.
Yeah.
I don't know where Danny picked that up, number one. Number two, you can see without Ryan McDonagh, and Danny Girardi's clearly not 100%, the speed quotient of the Pittsburgh Penguins was just so amazingly overpowering. The Rangers' defense was confused after the first period. They couldn't match pace at all. I didn't think it was a big problem for them.
But the Rangers came out pretty strong. It looked like they dominated the game at the first, you know, half of the
first
period.
First period, I agree.
And then everything just changed after that. And then the Lundqvist gets hurt and right before that. And I was kind of surprised he stayed.
I hope he's not hurt for a long time because I understand the mood around their hotel wasn't particularly good today in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. But you know, but Ranta, you know, can carry the load. He's not going to be Lundqvist, but you know,
they're just not good enough to beat Pittsburgh without McDonagh.
No, and even with McDonagh, I kind of wonder about their defense. That's my phone, and it shouldn't be on. I'm sorry.
Tell Scotty to call you back when Pete is done.
You know what it is? It's my daughter calling from the Bruce Springsteen concert in Detroit.
All right. Sound check?
I don't know.
All right. With Pierre McGuire in Florida, we'll get to the Panthers and Islanders and the other games tonight in a moment. Rod?
Pierre, when we get deep into the playoffs every year, we always talk about the grind and the battle of attrition that the playoffs become. Are players, and I know we've referenced a number of existing injuries, but are players generally fresher at this point in the playoffs, and does it provide with a better spectacle? Do players feel more involved out there just because they're physically able to do a bit more?
For some teams, yes. For other teams, no. If you look at a team like Chicago last night, you could see, I thought, the physical wear and tear that was being put on their defense. They were starting to feel it in the third period in the beginning part of overtime. And remember, they had a 5-on-3 in the first period in that game they didn't capitalize on, and they had a power play in overtime they didn't capitalize on. I think part of that is fatigue. But they're, again, they're such professionals. They'll figure a way how to get through this. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, because I think it's going to be very difficult. St. Louis impressed me in a lot of different facets of the game. But I look at a team like the Islanders, for instance, and everybody's talking about, you know, the energy you have to have. I think the Islanders play a lot like St. Louis. They really pride themselves on being a heavy hockey team, like Ken Hitchcock likes to say, Rod. And it's, this will be interesting to see how they play tonight, not having Jaro Halak, having some other guys that are banged up, potentially not having Travis Hamonic. I mean, this is going to be very interesting to see. You talk about the energy you have to have. I don't know if they're 100%, and if they're not 100%, I don't know how much energy they're going to have. So some teams are really good physically, and they're ready to rock, and other teams, they say they're ready, but they're not, because they know they got a lot of guys who are hurt.
Word late this afternoon is that Hamonic is expected to play. You know, where, you know, just how he is on that scale.
I'm at the rink right now, and nobody's here except for the coaches, and I haven't heard that, but I'm sure he probably will try to play.
The three games last night featured, you mentioned the 5-on-3, a lot of penalties, which, you know, I don't have an issue with, as long as they hold to this, that they don't officiate based on the score, the situation, what game of the series it is. You know, I certainly have my doubts. Do you feel that this is what they did last night is what we're going to see going forward?
No. You and I are on the same page.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it. What happened in the game last night, the only penalty they called in overtime was Colton Parayko putting the puck over the glass. There were other infractions that happened in that game, especially in the third period in the last 7 to 10 minutes, that probably would have been a call in the first period. I showed one. There was a cross check to the back of Patrick Kane. I made the point, if that had been the regular season, that's a penalty.
Yeah.
And if it had been in the first period of the game, it would have been a penalty. But they let it go because it was in the third period of a 0-0 game. So we're going to see shifting sand calling. That's just how it works in the playoffs. You get used to it over time. I don't think you're going to see this steady stream to the penalty box that we've seen to start.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, Pierre, but a lot of us were a little, you know, frustrated. We couldn't get your feed of the game. We got a different feed. Nothing against those guys. But did you know if you're going to be available at all for us?
On weekends and after the first round.
Okay.
Anything on the big NBC you're going to see. But everything else, you will not.
Okay. The Islanders, you want to pick up on the Islanders in Florida tonight?
Well, I just think that, you know, it really comes down to goaltending, you know, and Greiss has never played a playoff game, I don't believe. And it seems to me that's a critical component of this.
I agree with Stu, Mitch. I really do. And Stu, I think, nailed that. Thomas Greiss is a nice goalie, but I've seen him give up some goals the tail end of this year, especially when the pressure was on. He was crooked in the net. There was one. It was Victor Hedman, a Tampa Bay Islander game. Islanders came back to win, but Hedman scored, Stu. I think you and I talked about it the next day. I was like, what is he doing? He was turned sideways, and the puck beat him short side with about 3 seconds to go in the first period of the game. And I was like, if that's the kind of goaltending they're going to get, they're doomed. They have no chance of winning. Now, he straightened himself up, but he's still, I've seen him give up some other bad ones, too. So I don't know if it's pressure. I don't know if it's just because technically he's not as sound as maybe some of the better goalies in the league, but they're going to have to find a way to make him better in a hurry if they don't have Jaro Halak.
Pierre, you mentioned Hedman, and I know there was some concern because he appeared to be banged up, but man, was he was the Hedman we saw last spring, last night.
He looked like a Norris Trophy winner last night. I don't know if you agree with that, but I mean, I thought he looked as good as any defenseman in the league.
Yep, no question.
You know, and believe me, you saw Detroit was going after him. They were counting all those scrums. You see all the scrums that were created around the goal. You see what they did to it. See, that's good playoff coaching. That's having a plan. That's probably Granato telling, you know, Jeff Blashill, hey, listen, this guy's an important player. And Blashill's just back in the NHL after being so successful in the American Hockey League. You create scrums. We did this. I remember in 92, Scotty was kind of mad at me, but we'd create scrum situations in front of Dolfer to try to get Chelios crazy. And eventually we drove Chelios and Dolfer crazy. You know, and got Chelios run out of a game and Dolfer run out of a game. So you can do that stuff, but it takes time. You just have to be really creative, and you got to make sure your players understand how to do it and when to do it.
Pierre, hockey fans are going to be paying a lot of attention, of course, to Jaromir Jagr in this year's playoffs. And since coming back from Russia, the KHL, Jagr has one goal in 33 playoff games. Do you think that's going to change this playoff?
I do. Again, knowing the player and the person, he's extremely focused. And the fountain, you know, Ponce de Leon came to Florida to find the fountain of youth. and that's what Jagr's done coming down here when you think about it. I look at Jaromir now and I remember back to skating with him for hours and hours and hours. Hackle was in the league then, he could tell you. And it was just, the guy was just a workaholic. He was a machine. And he's back to doing that. And he's doing it because he just loves being a mentor. He loves working with these young kids. He's enjoying Barkov. He's enjoying Bukestad. When Trocheck was healthy, and I think there's a chance Trocheck could be back for this playoff run, he really loves being around him. It's the same thing when he was in Philadelphia. It's the same thing when he was with the Rangers. His passion to teach is really phenomenal, and it's something you didn't know about him when he was younger, but you can see clearly he's motivated by that, Mitch Gallo.
The year that he went scoreless in the playoffs when the Bruins picked him up, obviously he didn't put the puck in the net, but he was still involved. It was very difficult to get the puck away from him down low. I mean, he did, you know, he wasn't as effective as he has been in Florida, but it's not like he didn't add anything to that offense at the time.
Oh, I agree, but that's why I went, because that wasn't really the real Jaromir Jagr. That was a different situation, and I don't know why or how it didn't manifest itself better for him in Boston, but, you know, again, it's worked out really well for him here, and I give Dale Talon and Gerard Gallant a lot of credit. I mean, they really had a good vision and a focus in terms of what they've wanted to do with this group, and he's one of the leaders. You know, here's the one thing, and I was just talking to some of their trainers before. You look at the addition of Willie Mitchell, that's two Stanley Cup rings. Brian Campbell, that's one Stanley Cup ring. Sean Thornton, that's two Stanley Cup rings. Jaromir Jagr, that's two Stanley Cup rings. Is everybody saying, oh, these guys don't have a lot of experience? Nonsense. All of that experience plus Roberto Luongo's gold medal.
Right.
Roberto Luongo's world championship. I can go down the line. They've got more than enough guys here that know how to keep everybody calm in big moments. That's a big part of it, too. And you know, people forget, Roberto was a captain of the Vancouver Canucks. It's not like he doesn't know how to lead. He's a very, very good leader.
I was wondering about Thornton playing tonight, but what you're saying makes more sense. I don't know if they'll keep going that route, but just to give the younger players a bit of a buffer, I get it.
Can I just say one thing, because I'm glad you brought it up?
Yeah.
I think this thing's got a chance to be really nasty early. I think the Islanders want to try to break their spirit early. And I think one of the ways of doing that is you target the younger players. And that wouldn't surprise me to see Clutterbuck, who really understands this stuff, or Matt Martin, who really understands this stuff, or Casey Cizikas. Wouldn't surprise me to see Bukestad challenged early, Ekblad challenged early, Barkov challenged early. I don't think they'll go after Jagr, because he's smart enough. He's dealt with that stuff his whole career. But I think they're going to go after some of these young kids. I can tell you this, honestly. If I was drawing up the game plan, it would be savage, because that's what I would have my guys do.
Before we let you go, Marc-Edouard Vlasic was with us yesterday as that series gets underway tonight in Los Angeles. Not just Joe Thornton, but several key members of the Sharks who are around 30 or older had really good years. Here's what he had to say to us about that.
Well, combination of I think they've been playing a little bit less than the years before, and our days off have been outstanding this year. I think we've practiced 3-4 times, mm-hmm. but we've had a huge amount of days off compared to last year. It's all about keeping your energy for the game, and as you get older, I think the older guys might need a little more days off than the younger guys.
What do you think about that, Pierre, and the series?
Love it. First of all, love that guy, love that player, love the person. He's an awesome young man. He represents the city of Montreal on the West Island so well. I'm sure his parents are really proud of him. Huge fan. Picked him for my team. I was in that big thing that the NHL put together around Christmas time where everybody had an original six team. I was the general manager of the Canadiens. I picked Marc-Edouard Vlasic to be on my team. My coach was Mike Babcock, by the way, who loves Marc-Edouard Vlasic, had him at the Olympics. And I love that idea, because that's exactly what Scotty used to do. Once the playoffs started for us, by the way, in Pittsburgh, every practice was optional, except for the day before a series started. where we would do some finite retuning in terms of power play, penalty kill, face-off plays, but every other practice was optional. And most of the guys, you know, skated, but they skated at their own leisure. I think that's really smart, but doesn't surprise me with Pete DeBoer. And I can tell you this, Daryl Sutter does the same thing in Los Angeles. Same thing.
All right, is this going to be a typically long, tough, grinded-out L.A.-San Jose series here?
Probably. I have to think. There's no secrets there. Daryl knows Pete really well, and Pete knows Daryl really well. And, you know, I think one of the things people need to remember is Pete DeBoer worked with Daryl Sutter's brother, Brent, in the World Junior, and they're very good friends. There's not a lot of secrets there. And Brent and Daryl are very similar. So that's behind-the-scenes kind of stuff that can really affect the series, just a little bit of pieces of knowledge that you have. I think it's going to be nasty. I do. I don't think it'll be as nasty as Chicago-St. Louis is going to become, which started last night, but I think it's got a chance to be pretty nasty.
8 o'clock start tonight in Florida, Panthers and New York Islanders. Thanks, Pierre. Look forward to seeing it, even though we don't see you yet, and we'll talk about that and much more tomorrow.
Mitch, what time is Stu Hackle's curfew tonight?
Oh, probably when Hurley's closes.
Well, that's not a good answer.
Your tournament
just started. That's not a good answer.
That's a really bad answer. Have a good time.
Don't look for me there. Not a closing time. No way. Thanks, Pierre.
See you later. Bye.
Yeah, those days are gone, Stu. Yeah.
We have to play L.A. or Anaheim in the first round anyway, so might as well be them every year from now on. Four times in the last 5 years, us winning one, them winning two, so it's getting fun. I mean, normally this matchup, you don't see it till the second or third round, and now you get in the first. So you get it out of the way, you play Anaheim the second, get that out of the way, and then you're on the roll.
Last of the four games tonight. That's a 10:30 start. So we go from one West Island product that we did determine 100% Beaconsfield to another. Alex Killorn will join us in just a few minutes from Tampa Bay on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.